ESPN Daily is presented by Supercuts, the smarter, easier way to get a haircut. It's not just any haircut. It's Supercuts.
Here's Doncic feeling it early. Shoots a three and connects on another. But Luka, the blow-by of Mikal Bridges, and lays it in. Now Doncic knocks down Johnson, no call. Wide open for three, and he buries that one too. Luka hesitates, dribbles to his left, shoots for three, and hits again. Luka Doncic is crushing the Phoenix Suns. Doncic on top, going toward his left, now rises over eight and fires and buries another three. Smirking toward the crowd, loving every moment of it.
That is Luka Doncic demanding that we all find the right word for what his Mavericks did to the Suns last night. Because the term blowout, that is what the Celtics did to Giannis and the Bucks in Boston in their Game 7 hours before. But Luka was doing stuff in a different section of the dictionary. He was desecrating or defiling or debasing Phoenix, in Phoenix, by the way, in a way a box score cannot actually describe. So today, we deconstruct two destructions and this conference finals that we did not see coming. I'm Pablo Torre. It's Monday, May 16th. This is ESPN Daily.
Now let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue, and ready for the play. And boom, Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liqueur, Bardstown, Kentucky. 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
So, Brian Windhorst, you're in Boston. You covered this blowout of the Bucks. You're in your hotel room spending a late night with us. I appreciate that. But we're going to not talk about that first here. Because what we saw in Phoenix, Brian, like, you're a historian of this game. You've been at this for a very long time. Can you remember a more embarrassing, a more humiliating elimination game in your memory?
I can't. And I've been thinking about it for the last hour or so. I mean, there haven't been too many teams to lose. I mean, I know that ended up being a 30-point game, but it was essentially a 40-point game.
Yes.
To lose on your home court in the playoffs by 40. I mean, I'm sure it's happened a few times, but it's pretty rare. To lose a game seven on your home court by that kind of margin, exceedingly rare. To lose as the number one seed and a team that I spent a lot of time with this year, Pablo.
Yes.
And highly respected their focus, highly respected their drive, highly respected, the way they were assembled. I just can't understand it. And, I was thinking a little bit about the 2007 conference finals when LeBron James made his first major run in the postseason, and he upset the number one seed Detroit Pistons. But that was a grind. I mean, the game six was lopsided a little bit in Cleveland, but that was a grinding situation. And that, he went to double overtime in really what was the defining game, game five. To see this go down this way to this Suns team, it's just very hard for me to comprehend.
Yeah, no, Brian, what you described with LeBron there, and we'll bring up LeBron in a bit for reasons I think will become very obvious, but that was dramatic. This was dramatic in the sense that, like, I felt like I was watching a sociopath bomb threes relentlessly, even as the sociopath in question, Luka Doncic, had more points than the entirety of the opposing team, Brian.
Pablo,
like he had more points alone, yes, into the third quarter than the entirety of the Suns.
Pablo, I'm not sure if you took the most optimistic Mavericks fan on the planet, gave them three energy drinks, and, you know, some sort of shock treatment, that they could have come up with a scenario that they believed was possible, that you would get that the Suns wouldn't score 30 points in the first half.
They had, Brian, 57-27 at halftime, man.
I'd love to give you great analysis here, Pablo. I don't have it. I don't have it.
No. I'm with you. I'm with you. I laughed. I spent this entire game, because I have no rooting interest in the Phoenix Suns outside of the general sense of respect that I had, as you did. I just found myself laughing. And, you know, and the Suns, to recap here, right? They were 6-point favorites in this game. They are the third best defense by efficiency in the league. They have a team full of switchable, really good defenders on the wings. If you're to design a team that could stop a guy like Luka Doncic, it might be this team in theory. But Brian, you mentioned LeBron before, and that's the name I bring up now, because the team around Luka, for as dominant, as better than dominant as this team was tonight, we're talking about Jalen Brunson and Dorian Finney-Smith and Dwight Powell and Reggie Bullock. And to take this team to the Western Conference Finals, it reminds me, and trafficking in hyperbole here, it reminds me of the guy you spent most of your life covering.
Well, with all due respect to some guys I really like Ira Knubel and Sasha Pavlovich and Eric Snow, Booby Gibson, I love Z. The Mavericks have a little bit more talent than that Cavs team did, but I'm going to say, as long as I'm saying that, I now must say that the Detroit team that they beat was not as good as this Suns team.
No.
that LeBron team. No, this Suns team, 64 wins, you know, completely geared to be great in the postseason. And I admit that allowing this to get to game seven was a real unfortunate situation. And that when you have a guy like Luka on the other side, you are really rolling the dice. You know, if you'd have spoken to me before the game, I would have said, well, the Suns have the best team, but the Mavericks have the best player. Mm-hmm. And because of it, I'll give it, 65-35%. I give the Mavericks a 1-in-3 chance because they've got the best player.
Yep.
And I would have said that about some LeBron teams over the years that won games. And LeBron lost series that he just didn't have enough firepower in. To see it this lopsided, and not only that, but frankly, to see Chris Paul after two absolutely excellent games, to games one and two. Now, I don't have any information about...
Well, this is where my brain goes with you, Brian, because you're a guy who knows things. And my first question was going to be, has he been playing hurt secretly this entire time?
Well, he definitely hurt his left hand in the first... I covered their first round series against the Pelicans. He definitely hurt his left hand in that series. He sort of clandestinely was taping it. The Pelicans knew about it, and they started attacking him on that left side, trying to really... actually attacking his right side, trying to force him left. But he got through the series, went 14-14 in game... 6 to clinch it, and the tape has not been on in this series. And not that, by the way, not that an injured finger would explain the drop off. Last year I would point out that he had a wrist that needed surgery that he didn't ever disclose, although we knew it was hurting, but he didn't disclose he needed surgery after the season. But these last four games, and I have them here. So after they go up 2-0, Game 3 in Dallas, 12 points, seven turnovers, four assists, seven turnovers, a guy who is one of the greatest assist to turnover players in NBA history and was great on assist to turnovers throughout this postseason. And just to give you an idea, through the first two games, he had 11 assists to four turnovers.
And by the way, he turns 37 years old on the day of game three as this cliff seems to be emerging in our view.
Go ahead and try to figure that one out, Pablo. I'll listen to that podcast. game four, another loss. 5 points. 5 points. Okay. Ugh. He has two bad games on the road, you know, Luka and, you know, strikes back. Game five. Now we're in a 2-2 game five situation. The Mavericks don't play well this game. The Suns do play well. They win by 30 points. Chris Paul has 7 points. Okay, you know, he doesn't have to score. He did have 10 assists, but okay. Game six, closeout game, they get blown out. He goes, he only has 13 points. He has four assists and five turnovers. Pablo, I'm telling you, this, you know, two games, you know, out of four where he has more turnovers than assists, this just doesn't happen.
You know, I mean, look, him and Devin Booker all year, clutch time, this was the unparalleled duo in the sport. And it's just exactly seemingly the opposite to end the year.
And they were just great clutch players all year long. And you know, it was at the end of games a lot. But in a game seven situation, you're talking about instantaneous clutch from the moment you walk in the arena. Game seven, he has 10 points. His plus minus is minus 39. And Devin Booker, by the way, was worse. Devin Booker, who has a history. I mean, it's not
he
a
was
long.
Bad in this one, man.
But Devin Booker has, you know, last year was a killer in the closeout games. Had a couple of great ones. He goes 6 of 17 in game 6 in Dallas. Okay, it's on the road. You know, it happens. And then in this one, 3 out of 14, 11 points, minus 41. And, you know, after the game, Monty Williams, you know, he you know, and they did change up some strategy midway through this series. And he, you know, said he had done a poor job and he took the blame and said this was his fault. And, you know, you could go blow by blow on strategy and probably write a white paper where you could say, you know, that he made these mistakes, but it doesn't explain the collapse of his team. And the other thing about this, there are very, as far as I know, there are a very tight knit group. They were a team that reminded me of the Spurs the year after the Spurs blew the series against the Heat, where they were, all the way through the year, extremely focused. You don't win 64 games without having great focus. And by the way, they had injuries. Ayton was hurt.
Yep.
Paul was hurt. Booker was hurt. It wasn't like they had a fairy tale regular season. So then DeAndre Ayton plays 17 minutes in this game, is completely ineffective. And when Monty Williams gets asked why he only played 17 minutes, now keep in mind, just to give you some backstory here, DeAndre Ayton is the player that the Suns drafted ahead of Luka Doncic. And
that is correct. A very essential footnote to this desecration. Yeah.
I mean, look, the Suns have gone on to go to the finals and have a great team. It's not like that decision has completely undercut the franchise, but obviously, you think about, you see what Luka does here, and you see what DeAndre Ayton does. And so after the game, Monty Williams is asked, why did Ayton, who was a valuable playoff player to them, why does he only play 17 minutes? And Monty Williams simply says, it's internal.
Ooh.
And I'm sure we'll learn more about that. We may learn more about that by tomorrow. But that,
Brian, is hinting at internal team dynamics and not like, oh, he was having real bad indigestion internally inside his body.
That I would have to agree with. So I know that as a journalist, and, you know, we're doing this, the game, you know, literally just ended, you know, as a journalist and certainly as a fan, you watch this and say, there must be something else that happens here. And I don't know whether there is or isn't. I know that it's going to be investigated as much as it can be in the next, in, you know, in the coming days.
Yeah, no, the magnifying glasses are out now, Brian. The microscope is we're getting the real, like, high powered ones that NASA uses to figure out, like, where the suns went and what went wrong with them. Because Jason Kidd, all playoffs, have been talking about how we just need someone else to join the party, the one-man party that is Luka Doncic. And beyond all of the stuff that went awful for the Suns, Spencer Dinwiddie also has 30. Jalen Brunson also has 24. Like, the party right now is delirious, and it does feel like they have all night left to go. I mean, they were loving their lives exactly the opposite way that everybody in the crowd in Phoenix yeah. was feeling. But I guess
Pablo, the crowd
Ryan,
shots,
like, the montage of people, like a sad Lil Wayne and his son, I believe, just like nose deep into their phone courtside. It was like not the best use of money for a man who has spent money questionably, I would say, in his life.
Well, you know, it can happen where you have a role. I wouldn't call Spencer Dinwiddie a role player. It can happen where you have a, you know, a supporting player just get hot. It doesn't, we don't often see it in game sevens on the road. I would compare it to a guy like Jeff Green in the 2018 playoffs, having one of the games of his career for the Cavs in Boston. It was a complete unexpected situation. And, you know, Spencer Dinwiddie has a successful resume. You don't expect a reserve bench player to go 11 of 15 shooting. That is an outlier performance, and that can happen in a one-game situation. And so that's why, as a top seed, you don't go to a seventh game. But this is 4 losses in 5 games. You know, they were 2-0.
Mm-hmm.
This is 4 losses in 5 games as the number one overall seed. With a couple of those games at home. And, you know, I do think Jason Kidd used some of his, you know, his own personal experience against Chris Paul in that they decided they were really going to be rough with him and body him and make him uncomfortable. Jason knows what it is to make a point guard uncomfortable. And that definitely contributed to it.
Yeah.
I think Luka, I'll say this about Luka, Pablo, he has an already illustrious history of performing well with his back against the wall. Now, he ended up losing the last 2 years to the Clippers in both year. He ended up losing to the Clippers in the playoffs in elimination games the last 2 years, but he was great in those games.
Yes.
And if you go back and look to his EuroLeague record, where, you know, they play one game playoffs, he was great in those games when he was EuroLeague MVP. You go back and look at last summer when he was leading the Slovenian national team in a game probably almost nobody in the United States is even aware of. In Lithuania, he leads the Slovenians to upset the Lithuanians for the last spot in Europe to get into the Olympics. I mean, that was an incredible victory.
I just looked it up, right? 38 in 2020 in that decided game against the Clippers, 46 in game 7 the year after that. I mean, he has built a mythology, and this game in particular, this series, this is the national showcase. This is the time when everyone was like, it is time for us to actually reckon with how special he is at age 23.
Yeah, and so, I mean, that is why coming into this game, you know, his resume was already extremely impressive. And, you know, I'll just refer you to that game against Lithuania. And you may say, well, that's not an NBA game. What is the difference? How can you compare a Olympic qualifier? Well, go see what it's like to play in Lithuania and play for your country. And, you know, he has 31 points, 11 rebounds, and 13 assists in that game. So when you say to me, oh, Luka has a 35 points in 30 minutes, I might add.
Yeah, exactly. He got pulled out of a rare show of mercy in this one. Yeah, with 35, 10, and 4.
And so that's why I would say, the initial round of odds that came out from the sports books after the game had the Warriors as a just a little bit under a 3-1 favorite. And I'm kind of saying, are you sure about that? Are you sure that you're, how do you like Luka at
dude, oh my Lord. How do I like Luka against the team that doesn't have any of the defenders because Gary Payton II has been injured and may not be back in time? How do you like a team without the defenders that the Suns had trying to stop that dude? Yeah, not, I don't like it, actually. 3-1 does seem now with the cold light of day, a factor. It does seem a little generous to Golden State.
Yeah, and this Mavs team has defended now for two, three months. They've, Jason Kidd, he wasn't a controversial hire because of his he was a champion with the Mavericks. Jason Kidd's first two stops in the NBA as head coach, it didn't go great, but he has done a terrific job with this team. He's gotten them to improve as the season goes along. He sold them on playing defense, which, was an issue for Luka, remains an issue for Luka, but he's worked around it. They didn't panic when they got down 2-0 in this series. He made it mid-series adjustments. Like, Monty Williams was the unquestioned coach of the year, but by Monty's own admission, I think Jason Kidd outcoached him here in this series.
Yeah, the Mavericks were the fourth seed in this. No one gave them a chance. The Suns seemed like the only team that any of us had a sort of conventional level of confidence in a playoffs full of chaos. But yeah, the Mavs, to your point, man, they were sixth in defensive efficiency on the year. They're better than we think. And so just as we look ahead, Brian, because the Warriors on Friday night seemed to set sort of the high mark for disrespect on the weekend, just like turning the ball over all game, half-assing it through three quarters, then pouring it on in the fourth, winning by 14 over the Grizzlies, missing Ja Morant. That team and this team in Luka Doncic's Mavericks, what is it going to feel like to you, the Western Conference Finals?
I would tell you something. Devin Booker apparently made a mistake in trash-talking Luka. In that blowout Game 5 win, he falls on the floor right in front of the camera and says he's laying there pretending he's hurt is the Luka special, he calls it.
Mm-hmm.
Luka totally embraced
that camera. Yeah.
Luka totally embraced it, totally embraced that rivalry, went chest to chest with him and put him down. I would say be careful saying anything about him, Draymond Green. I mean, I know Draymond, I love that Draymond likes to be honest and likes to talk about other guys. I welcome it on his podcast. I welcome it at the podium. I welcome it in the game. You don't have to listen to me. He won't listen to me anyway. But I would stay away from trash talking Luka Doncic. He's going to be hard enough to handle on the court. And they're going to come in there. It's almost perfect because they're going to get 2 days off. Like the series in the East, Boston's going to have, under 48 hours, right around 48 hours to travel, get ready and go. Dallas gets 2 days. They're going to get a prep day, a travel day and a prep day. And they're going to be coming in there on fire. So I respect the Warriors for sure, but they had a wide variance in the way they were playing in that Grizzlies series. They didn't bring it every night. Well, I tell you, man, I mean, I agree with the casinos that the Golden State should be favored for a number of reasons, but you think this is going to be that they got some lucky break? I got another thing coming.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, Brian, you mentioned podcast professional Draymond Green. Let's show him how it's done. Let's hit a bump right here. And after the break, you'll take us to Boston to show us exactly what you saw earlier on Sunday afternoon.
Delicious meat, nutritious. In the snack that packs a real protein punch, Wonderful Pistachios, one of the highest protein nuts out there. Each 1-ounce serving has 6 grams of protein, giving you over 10% of your daily value. Trust me, I've been eating them like there's no tomorrow all week. Wonderful Pistachios also come in a variety of flavors and sizes, perfect for enjoying with your family and friends or taking them with you on the go. And you, like me, are on the go a lot, taking the kids to school, hopping from meeting to meeting, shopping for groceries, whatever it may be. Well, the good news is, not only are Wonderful Pistachios a complete protein providing all 9 essential amino acids, they're also great for all your adventures. So whether you're a pistachio purist who loves cracking open every nut, or you prefer the convenience of no-shells pistachios, Wonderful Pistachios has got you covered. Grab Wonderful Pistachios and elevate your snack game today. Visit WonderfulPistachios.com to learn more. Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code DAILY. That's code DAILY. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats. Experience it live.
So, Brian, what you saw in Game 7 in Boston, where you are right now, still in your hotel room, I assume just surrounded by the teeming masses celebrating Celtics 109, Bucks 81. We talked about the faces in Phoenix, Brian, on television, the sad parade. What was it like to be at that building today in Boston?
I mean, absolutely electric. It was about a 45-minute party at the end of that game after a series that was very close and that the Celtics and their fans, you know, probably thought a couple of different times. They were cooked. And if Red Auerbach could have joined us in a ghost form and you told him that his Boston Celtics were going to win a Game 7, a high-stakes Game 7, taking 55 three-pointers and 33 two-pointers. That's 55, 33. he would not have believed you and might have said some things that, you know, about the concept.
Yeah, it would have felt like the smoke was a different sort, I think. A different sort of cigar for Red.
Which definitely was blazing on the streets of Boston this evening.
Very legal. Very legal now, Brian. And I want to understand how this kind of a high was reached. Let's put it that way, right? Because
yeah, well done.
The best player in the world is Giannis Antetokounmpo by popular acclamation. But what was Grant Williams by contrast here? Because that's the name that I could not stop marveling at in this one.
Right. So on an average day, the Milwaukee Bucks believe in protecting the paint and encouraging you to shoot the three-pointer. And that's Mike Budenholzer's strategy. And over the course of the last few years, there have been times where the opposition has lit the Bucks up from three-point range. And it is always a strategy he believes in, and he believes on balance they win. And he's got a shiny ring with a bunch of diamonds in it from last year to back up that concept. Mm. So coming into this game, the Bucks didn't love their alignment from Game 6 in Milwaukee, where they blew a shot on their home court to end the series. And it was a surprise, even though Chris Middleton was out, and that was a huge factor in this series, Pablo. I mean, I would even argue that it was a remarkable situation that the Bucks, without their second-best player, got to an elimination, right? Got to a
yes.
closeout game.
Against a team as good as this,
for
yes.
For sure, because Boston is really, really good. But they gave up 17 threes in that game. And so Mike Budenholzer decided to make a switch, and he decided to challenge Grant Williams, basically. They assigned Brook Lopez, instead of guarding one of the Celtics' big men, he was going to guard Grant Williams, who had been starting in place of Robert Williams, who missed the last four games of the series. And they said, Brook Lopez, hey, you're a seven-footer, stay in the paint. Do not go out there, and just don't even bother with Grant Williams. And, you know, Grant Williams, he used to be a very poor three-point shooter. He shot 29%
yes.
in college at Tennessee. When he came into the NBA, he missed his first 25 threes. Oh, for 25, 3 years ago. But Pablo, he's worked really hard on it. Yeah. You know, he came out of the pandemic. He came out of the pandemic. He lost weight and gained 3-point shooting percentages. I think the pounds went right to the 3-point shooting percentage. He shot 40. He would struggle a little bit in this series, but he did shoot 41% for the regular season. And Mike Budenholzer said, "We're just not going to guard him." And as a result, he took more 3-pointers in a playoff game than anyone who's ever worn the Celtics green. And he made as many as anybody ever has in a game 7.
Yeah, Jaylen Brown after the game was calling him Grant Curry.
and Grant was pointing out that they're both from Charlotte and he should not be overlooked as one of the greatest shooters from Charlotte. And so basically the strategy was eviscerated and the Celtics made 22 3-pointers, the most they've ever made in a playoff game in their history. And Giannis played one of the finest games by a losing player in NBA history. I would put it at least statistically in the same ballpark as Jerry West's 1969 finals loss, for which he won the series MVP, famously on the losing team. Just let me give you a couple of bullet points here. Giannis was the first player in history. I'll underline that. The first player in history to have 200 points, 100 rebounds, and 50 assists in one series.
Mm.
He was the first player in history ever to average 40 points, 15 rebounds, and 5 assists over a 4-game span, which he did from games 3 through 6. He had 25 points, 20 rebounds, and 5 assists in consecutive playoff games. That hasn't been done since Shaquille O'Neal in 2001, which arguably was the greatest playoff run, most dominating playoff run in the modern era.
That he
would do that. And to finish this series with two 2020 games back-to-back, because he had 44 points and 20 rebounds in game 6. He's the only player ever to have back-to-back 2020 playoff games other than Will Chamberlain and Bill Russell. And Pablo, when you do something that you tie Will Chamberlain in, you have done something statistically. So that is the force that Giannis was throwing at the Celtics and what they survived essentially by just shooting their way through it. And so, yeah, they move on and they're banged up a little bit and they're going to face Miami with a rest disadvantage. And maybe that they handed away a game and a half in this series, but surviving Giannis Antetokounmpo was an incredible accomplishment.
Yeah. I mean, Brian, they have been assassinating the guys on the list of best player in the world so far in the playoffs. They put Kevin Durant in the trunk of a car and locked him in there and drove around at their will. They do this to Giannis, eliminating a guy who is, yes, otherwise unstoppable. But by the end of this series, by the way, by the end of this game, notably just exhausted, grabbing his shorts, hunched over, clearly sort of the Atlas figure trying to hold up the whole world, missing Chris Middleton, needing a more efficient Drew Holiday. And I just marvel at the Celtics defense, because the Robert Williams that you alluded to is the best player on the defense, or at least that's what we had all said before the playoffs started. He's mostly been a non-factor. So how do you make sense of a defense that is this good that just snuffed out Giannis and the Bucks, the defending champions?
Well, they're a team that is battle-tested within the season. They were, they were below 500. They started this year 16-19. That is not a small sample size. That's almost half the season, and they were terrific the whole second half, and they, just were very resilient. They do it because they play, tremendous defense, And it really embodies their head coach, Ime Udoka, who was raised in the Greg Popovich school, played for him and coached under him, and really just has gotten them into a place where they become very mentally tough. And let me just point this out, that something that was very relevant at the end of the regular season, you know, there were teams, particularly the Milwaukee Bucks, who did not like the idea of facing the Brooklyn Nets in the first round of the playoffs. The Nets were headed to the play-in, and after going seven games with them last year, Milwaukee,
the world's most dangerous, seven or eight seed, Brooklyn Nets.
Boston did not feel that way. Boston played its players at the end of the season and got the number two seed, and they said, look, we'll play who's in front of us, and we'd prefer to have home court advantage in that second round. Well, guess what? They've got home court advantage, and they had game seven on their home court, and it made a difference. You know, the way that they shot the ball really made a difference. And so that just goes to their mental toughness. They were not intimidated, not afraid, and rightly so. And, you know, it's a fascinating dichotomy, you know, the way that the two teams approach that. And they approached this series the same way. They were down 3-2 going on the road. They never, Pablo, looked in that it looked like they thought they were going to lose this series. You know, I've covered many series where it was 2-2 going to game five, and the winner of game five, even if it was close, sometimes overwhelmed the loser in game six. A lot of times game five and 2-2 is more competitive than game six. Boston came to Milwaukee for game six and was not thinking that they were defeated. And it really showed the way they played the last two games.
No, I leave this series and I'm marveling, and not just the name of Grant Williams, I'm marveling at a resurrected Al Horford. I'm marveling at, you know, Peyton Pritchard. I'm marveling at these dudes, Brian, that I did not expect to be so impressed by. And on that, I feel like the only logical thing is to also marvel at Ime Udoka, the coach. It's also to marvel at the GM, Brad Stevens, the former coach, who many of us had questions about. Even the whole Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown thing, right? Like, midway through the year, it was an active conversation. Which one would you rather trade? And now the idea of giving away either of them is ridiculous.
Not only that, but the trade for Al Horford that Brad Stevens executed last offseason, Horford was huge, especially early in the series. He got worn down as a 35-year-old in the second part of the series, but he was huge in that part. The trade deadline maneuver of picking up Derek White. White was terrific.
And, yes.
You know, he didn't shoot the ball well in game seven, but he was very key in the midway part of the series. And even Daniel Theis. I mean, Robert Williams was a guy who was thought to be irreplaceable for them. He missed four games in this series, and Daniel Theis served as sort of the emergency center and held his own. That was another trade at midseason. The buttons that Brad Stevens has pushed have worked very, very well, including the decision to hire Ime Udoka as his head coach. And, you know, not that I thought there was any danger of that, but Udoka got off to a rough start, and Stevens supported him, and look what he's got now.
Yeah, they survived the players-only meetings. They survived the news cycle that ensues. They're here now, and they get the heat, Brian. And there was a time when Celtics heat had its own particular, it had its own particular river of bad blood running through it. I think of Pat Riley famously. You remember the quote, right? The statement to Danny Ainge.
It's one of the most amazing things I've ever covered.
Yeah, Danny Ainge needs to shut the f*** up and manage his own team. Right, we're
on
the
record,
post,
not like over, not overheard. To be clear with that story, a Heat spokesman came out to the media before a game and said, "I have a statement from Pat Riley," and he read the statement, and we all thought he was joking, and he was not joking. He read the statement, and by the way, if there was a fine given to Pat Riley for making that statement on the record, it was not announced. I think the league and David Stern just let him do it.
And whatever the fine would have been, it would have been totally worth it, because it's the greatest press release and dramatic reading of a press release of all time. But we're in the post-Ainge phase, Brian. That's part of the Brad Stevens story now. And so the team that these Celtics are going to face in that Miami Heat team, which And I hate to give you all of the credit on this, but yeah, I apologize for the high I was on re-James Harden last week, a week ago tonight. But you were right about that. The Heat were right about that. They're going to face these Celtics. What is this one going to be like?
Well, it's a rematch of the Eastern Conference Finals that took place in the bubble, which was a six-game series and featured really a coming out party for both Tyler Hero and Bam Adebayo at different phases in their career. But Adebayo was tremendous in that series. Hero had a 37-point game four, which was a vital game at the time. The Celtics have been a team that's reached the conference finals, I believe, four times in the last 6 years. Never won it. You know, ran into LeBron a couple of times, and then ran into, Jimmy Butler and the Heat, who, you know, were really churning at that point, really were playing their best basketball before Dragic and Adebayo got hurt and missed a big chunk of the finals against the Lakers. And so, this is a rematch situation, and, you know, it's going to be a different Jason Tatum. You know, Jason Tatum was really good in that series. He was sort of establishing himself as that type of player. He averaged 27 points and 10 rebounds and 6 assists in that series. He was not the reason the Celtics weren't able to get it done, although he didn't shoot the ball as well. Well, the Jason Tatum who is coming to Miami this week is a much more well-formed Tatum. He had a really terrific stretch in games 4, 5, and 6 of the series with the Bucks, not matching Giannis stat for stat, but doing as good of a job as he could and outplaying him in the vital game 6, where he had 46 points in Milwaukee. And so, you know, the Heat have earned home court. They've taken care of their business so far. They've managed injuries and changes to their constant changes to who's available throughout the regular season and postseason. Kyle Lowry, very much of an emotional leader and point guard, may miss the start of this series. Appears like he's going to miss the start of this series with a hamstring injury. There's a lot into this series that, you know, portends high competition, especially considering the Heat, who are the slight underdog. The Celtics are the slight favorite. The Heat have been underdogs throughout the season and are a team that has home court advantage as an underdog. You don't see that every day.
No. But Brian, at the very end here, I will point out that I just realized the grand silver lining to all of this, as far as my psychology is concerned, because it turns out, actually, I'm looking at this. Yep. The 76ers, Brian, definitely had the closest of all of those elimination games we saw this weekend.
You would have taken some money off of me, Pablo, if you'd asked me about that a couple of days ago.
99-90 has never felt so perversely relieving. Brian Windhorst, you have earned yourself some relief on a late night. Thanks for joining us, man.
Thanks, Pablo. Have a good week.
I'm Pablo Torre. This has been ESPN Daily. I'll talk to you tomorrow.